I was actually frozen with anxiety.
In those moments, how do you keep going and how do you keep on finding the strength to keep on waking up every day and keep on driving your mission and vision forward and then building it to such a point where you then go on to sell it?
That's where a co-founder is really important, I think. Like doing it solo, or if you're doing it solo, then you just have to have a strong network of either advisors or friends. Or because there was a time where I was paralyzed with anxiety. I actually couldn't get out of bed, and I'm a very positive person. I don't feel like I've ever had depression, but I was actually frozen with anxiety. It was all in my head. It was all my own expectations. It was all my own failing against my own commitment to myself. Like, it wasn't anyone else telling me. We didn't have shareholders. It was all our own company. But I just got caught in a spiral. And so strong advice is to have people around you, because whilst it can seem very glamorous and can have great outcomes, it's a very, very hard path to take. All of the listeners out there, I do think, so, you know, we've talked about how hard it is, but actually, you love what you do, you know, you're just a happier person.
Jodi, welcome to the Career Confidence Podcast. I have been very excited since I booked this in to chat with you today. I was just saying offline before we jumped on how you and I have got some very similar passions around women in business, women in technology. So I know this conversation is going to be, will have a lot of value for the audience. But before we dive in, could you give us a quick introduction into yourself, your background, and what brought you here today? So, Jodi, over to you.
Thanks, Georgie. Yes, I'm excited to be here. All of these topics are my passion area as well. So, so my name is Jodi Imam. I'm currently a co-founder and co-CEO of Tractor Ventures. And it feels like my whole life has kind of led, like everything I've done has been the perfect background for what I'm now doing, which is nice because it didn't feel like it all of that time. but so basically I've been running businesses for 20 years. I started in the corporate world, sort of came out of uni and got spat out into IT and telco companies, which was awesome opportunity. But after 3 years, I kind of realized that the corporate world was killing my soul, and it's great for some people, it just wasn't great for me. So at the time I ran away to the fashion industry and joined up with Leona Riverston, Australian fashion designer, right when she was starting her second label, and I was her general manager, and I was there for 9 years, which was a lot longer than I expected. But the business just kept growing year on year. We sort of went from a few staff to 100 staff, from 2 stores to 25 stores, with stores in LA, Hong Kong, London. We took manufacturing offshore. There was a whole lot of learning, and it was a bootstrap business, and I was head down in spreadsheets most of the day, just managing the very, very tight cash flow that happens in those kind of businesses. But it was just, it was thrilling, and I learned so much. But I always wanted to be an entrepreneur and run my own thing. So I started having babies, and that was the point in my life where I thought this is a good sort of point to change up what I was doing. And actually, the Leona Riverston business was like my baby. And once I started having babies, it was too many babies.
Yeah.
the natural break. So I started my first tech startup back in 2012, which was called Occasional Butler, which was a marketplace for getting small jobs done around the home and office. Back when marketplaces, especially for services, weren't really a thing yet, and we didn't know until we got it out there in the market that people weren't comfortable with the concept yet, and there's a lot of education to do. But we got there and ended up selling that business to Airtasker in 2014. Also started one of Melbourne's first co-working spaces at the same time, called Depot 8, which we ran profitably and grew organically over 8 years until the pandemic hit and we had to quickly close it down. We just knew straight away, March 2020, that we weren't going to be able to sustain it over even a few months without members, let alone a few years. So had to make that brutal decision, but happy we could do that quickly. And then, I guess after selling Occasional Butler, I started doing a whole lot of work in the startup ecosystem. And so I ran the accelerator for SBE, which supports women-led tech companies. I've been a mentor at StartMate. I set up Innovation Bay in Melbourne, a whole bunch of things. And that's how I came to meet Matt Allen, co-CEO of Tractor. And yeah, we started Tractor in December 2020.
Wow. That's quite the CV. I don't even know where to start. Look, I really want to go into Tractor Ventures because I think what you're doing there is incredible. But look, you just listed off so many achievements there, and I was sat there and I am sort of sat there going, okay, wow. So you started that business, built that business, sold that business. And my instant reaction goes, how did that idea come about? What was the first step? Because so many people would love to start a side hustle, love to start a business, and they get so paralyzed by just not even knowing where to start. So you said at the start, you always wanted to be an entrepreneur. So let's sort of start there. Do you think entrepreneurs are born or can they be molded? Did you always have the entrepreneurial tendency when you reflect on your childhood? Did you have a lemonade stand, you know, or was this something that you sort of grew into?
I love that question. It's a great question. I actually never had a lemonade stand. I don't think it was anything that I was born with. What I was born with was, well, yeah, probably born with, but also during my childhood, I developed a fierce independence and wanting to earn money very early. So I started doing jobs at the age of 12 and 13. I was a babysitter, and at 14 and 9 months, the legal age, I started my first casual job. You know, I was very, very determined to create my own financial independence from a very young age. But I think the moment that I decided I needed to be an entrepreneur was actually, I was at Ericsson, the mobile phone company, and it was in 2000, and they were selling phones like hotcakes back then. But they were still wanting to create efficiency, so they made a whole lot of people in my immediate sort of sphere redundant. And some of these guys had been there for 30 years and were just like, what do I do now? Like, they just didn't know what was going to happen. And it was right then the penny dropped for me that I can't rely on even the most successful corporation to give me that financial security. And that's when I decided I've got to build that for myself.
Really interesting. It's funny, actually, as you were sort of saying that, it's like, I think it's always really important to reflect on those defining moments in your life. And for you, it was that, like, you know, no corporation, no big business can keep you safe. And that's really interesting, because I think, like, for me, it was the financial independence was really, really important, because I grew up in quite a traditional family where dad went out, earned all the money, mum was a stay-at-home mum. And I think that I always looked at her as, I want to earn my own money. If I want to go and buy something, I want to go and buy it. I don't want to have to rely on anybody, no corporation, no man, nobody. I want to have my own money. And that drove me to then start my own business, CH Talent Solutions, a recruitment company. So it's just really interesting how we have these moments and something clicks in us and we go, oh, that was the reason why I started it. So let's go back to sort of scaling your first company, because you just sort of said it. Yeah, we sold it to Airtasker, and that was that. So how did that idea come about? I'm like, wow. How did the idea come about? Because it's one thing having an idea, it's quite the other executing it. So talk to me about building that and the struggles and lessons learned.
Yeah. So the idea came, my new husband at the time and I were buying our first house in Annandale in Sydney, and we were very lucky to get this house, but it was a mess and we needed to do a lot of renovation. We had to knock out 11 walls to make it livable and all sorts of, but we didn't have very much money because at the auction we had to use it all. And so it came from, like, how do we get help to renovate this home without, you know, 150 minimum call out from tradies and or just one car at all because the job's too small, that sort of thing. So that was where the inspiration came from. And then we started looking at overseas and we found TaskRabbit, which was doing the same thing. The first company that we sort of had seen that was embracing this sharing economy and collaborative consumption, and we went right into that. That's awesome. I just fell in love with that whole concept and we thought that's the model we want to use to solve this problem. And then the way we went about it is the way I would advise no one to ever go about it. And so because we just, like, we actually sold that house to build Occasional Butler. And
wow. You
know, so we had cash and we probably burnt too much cash too soon. So we didn't do the MVP. We just, like, went ahead and did the full build, like every feature possible, and then launched to find out that, obviously, you know, you can't do that in a silo. You have to be talking to customers. And so we had to undo a whole lot of work and then redo new work, and it was very expensive. Yeah.
So looking back on that then, would you, if you could give advice to your younger self, what would you have done differently when starting that business?
I would have had a homepage and a spreadsheet and a phone. Because seriously, once we launched, it actually took 3 months before we had our first customer transacting. And then even then it was like one, and then the next week another one. Like, we could have easily done that manually. Mm-hmm. We did not have to have the whole thing completely automated from the start. And so that's definitely my advice. Like, just that MVP, minimum viable product, just do, make a nice fancy homepage, but at the back end, just be like a duck and just be like paddling hard until you know what you need to build.
Mm. You must see that a lot now, working with sort of entrepreneurs, how they just obsess about the product, obsess about, you know, all the bells and the whistles, but actually start with something really basic. And I can put my hand up and say I did exactly the same thing. My husband and I actually founded it was a live streaming fitness app called Flive. And we spent a bit, like you said then, far too much money on it, crazy amounts of money on it. And when we came to launch it, we had no money for marketing. We had, you know, like, it was a disaster, to be quite honest. Yep. But I learned so much from that experience. And I think that you also said something as well about your co-working space, about how you shut it down. And I think what's really interesting, and I always try and find patterns with people who go on to achieve incredible things. And one pattern is reframing failures as opportunities for growth. And how have you gone about that? Because I can imagine in that moment, pouring all your heart and soul into that business, and then it being crickets, there's no customers. In those moments, how do you keep going, and how do you keep on finding the strength to keep on just waking up every day and keep on driving your mission and vision forward, and then building it just to such a point where you then go on to sell it?
Yeah, good question. I think that that's where a co-founder is really important. I think, like, doing it solo, or if you're doing it solo, then you just have to have a so strong network of either advisors or friends, or, because there was a time where I was actually paralyzed with anxiety. I actually couldn't get out of bed, and I'm a very positive person. I don't feel like I've ever had depression, but I was actually frozen with anxiety. Like, I just couldn't continue. So my ex-husband was, you know, he see that, and he sort of helped me get out of it, and suggested that I talk to someone who had, you know, like a mentor, an external mentor. And that's when I met Delia Chills, who had started Find a Babysitter. And so that was the only sort of comparable thing at the time, where she was a little bit ahead of us. And once I did that, she just reset my whole, like, I built up like this stress because I had this spreadsheet going like this, and we were nowhere near it. And so it was all in my head. It was all my own expectations. It was all my own failing against my own commitment to myself. Like, it wasn't anyone else telling me. We didn't have shareholders. It was all our own company. But I just got caught in a spiral. And so I think, strong advice is to have people around you, because this, whilst it can seem very glamorous and can have great outcomes, it's a very, very hard path to take.
Well, then that's exactly why I always like to go back to the beginning, because you think about the success iceberg and people only see the tip. They don't see everything that it takes from you as well to build a business, the sacrifice. And look, I can speak to that as well. I had terrible anxiety for most of my sort of mid-20s, because the pressure that no one else put on me, I put it all on myself. And I had these massive expectations, these massive goals, and I was trying to put a timeline on these things that really, I was like, it was so pointless. It didn't mean anything. Like, just because we weren't hitting the goals every single quarter didn't mean I was failing. It was, the business was still sort of doing okay, but I was constantly setting these expectations higher and higher and higher, and it's caused me more and more anxiety. And I think it's just a really important conversation that doesn't get discussed enough in business, because people do see the glamour, and actually there's hardly anything glamorous about it. Most days you're in your slogs with your hair tied back, just sat at your laptop. There's nothing glamorous about building a business in the beginning. And I think people don't understand that. But obviously, when you get it right, the levels of freedom and everything that can give you, that the monetary rewards are there. But you talked a lot about the importance of a co-founder. Look, I feel I did very well. I have chosen one that's incredible. She's my best friend, and you know, we are there for each other through thick and thin, and we have been. But what advice would you give for people thinking about starting a business or maybe going into business with somebody? What should you look for in a co-founder? You know, should you find someone that's got fills your gaps, or should you find someone that's similar to you? Like, what's your advice for people there?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because my first co-founder was my ex-husband, and that worked very well for us at that time when we had a young family and we could work together, and he would understand how I've got to go and pick up the kids because they're his kids.
Yeah.
there's those things. And I do think that there's a lot of people that would worry that, you know, that say, oh, I don't admit that my co-founder is my husband or whatever, but I do think it can work extremely well. In the case I have now with Matt and April, we have very different skill sets. And that was a deliberate idea that, you know, like Matt originally had the idea. He had talked to April about her working with him on this one, and they knew straight away that they didn't have the skill set that I have, and they would need it if they were going to run this company. So they were actively seeking that skill set. I knew Matt already, having worked as an advisor with him, but not like, not husband, not best friend, not schoolmate forever, not brother or sister. Like, could have gone different ways, but I do think my take on it is, after 3 years and we're working extremely well together, is definitely that different skill set. Look outside your skill set, because ultimately, if you've got the same skill set and you're doing the same things, you're gonna butt heads a bit, I reckon. But the other thing I'd say is that it takes, or you should spend, a lot of time really working on those relationships. So I spent a lot of time with Matt and April, you know, socially and just checking in, and we, a lot of meetings. So we really do invest time in building our relationships, and they are the most important things. Yeah.
It's so true, isn't it? Because otherwise you just get lost in the business and you forget that those relationships are so important. And I always think, when I sort of look at Pam, I go, if we build this business and after like 5-10 years time we don't like each other, that to me has been a failure, because ultimately I want to maintain the relationship that I've had with my business partner. And unfortunately, you see it time and time again, people want different things, people grow apart. So keeping those relationships really tight, checking in with each other, is really, really good advice, I think for anyone who's building a business with people. But look, love to touch upon Tractor Ventures. Like, what's the mission? What's the vision? How did that idea sort of come about? And, you know, how has that sort of grown, evolved over the last sort of like few years?
Yeah. So our mission is to unlock possibilities for founders. You know, the reason we're called Tractor Ventures is we like the analogy of rockets and tractors. Because, you know, before we existed, there was pretty much the VC model for investing in startups. And so the rocket analogy is the VC model, and rockets are very exciting, and some of them land on the moon, but they're also very expensive and a lot of them blow up along the way. And having, you know, especially Matt and I have been in the ecosystem working with startups for the last 12 years, we've seen a lot of that carnage, you know, co-founders thrown out the window and all sorts of stuff. It's like, it can get pretty brutal, because, and not because the people running these VCs aren't amazing, they're fantastic, but they, you know, there's a business there. Like, the fund has to return for its LPs in a period of time. So that's just the model, and it works for some companies, but not all. So we want to be there for the tractors. So all of those other companies that don't fit that model, don't want to go on that journey, and just want to run their business in their own way on their own time frame. And so if you said to a farmer, "I'm sorry, I'm going to take away your tractor," she or he is most likely going to say, "No, don't do that," because the tractor becomes very essential to their business. So the companies that we're supporting, you know, their software becomes very critical to their customer. And so, yeah, we sort of saw that there was a massive gap between all the, like, VC can only take those moonshots, and they'll openly say that. Like, if you're a business that wants to grow over 10 years and become a $50 million business and sell at that point, that's just too small for the VC journey. But for founders who still own 80% of the business by that stage, that might be a great outcome. I'd be happy with that.
Yeah, definitely.
And so there's a lot of those customers. So we actually started thinking that we'd probably be able to find 10 of them per year. We've just funded 160 companies. We
have deployed $1 million
in the last 3 years. So there's a lot. It's actually gone a lot faster than we expected, which is amazing. It's fantastic.
So what's your process then for starting to work with a company? Do you have certain things that you look for? Like, what's the most important thing when you're sort of starting to invest in these founders and their companies?
Yeah, great question. And actually, I didn't even say what we do to. So our funding is alternative capital, we're calling it, because at the moment it's debt, but it might also have a different type of equity in the near future. But it's basically like, see it as a business loan that you use when you want a short term return on an investment. So it might be a salesperson or an ad campaign or something where you know if you put some extra money in, you're going to bring forward revenue, then that makes a lot of sense. I talk to founders all the time. If you're wanting to build out an engineering team with the view of in 3 to 6 years' time, you're going to have this fantastic platform, then don't take debt for that. But you do need to sell shares for that. But if it's, if you already know how you're going to make the next bit of money, then it's crazy to sell shares for that. So it's non-dilutive capital. And typically, you can get a loan from a bank, but a lot of tech companies can't because banks don't understand tech companies. Mm-hmm. And so our process is we will talk to a founder. Founders need to be making at least $15,000 a month in revenue for us to be able to lend. And they need to have been doing that for at least 6 months. And there needs to be some sort of cash buffer as well, which most, founders would have. Like we call it, I call it sleep at night money. I'm sure you've experienced the same, Georgie. You can't have no money in the account.
Yes.
And sleep. And so they're the kind of basics. And then we'll have a chat. Usually it'll be a Zoom call. And then our credit team will assess the business through a zero link and some very light touch information. And then within 2 weeks, we can have money in the account. So it's pretty quick.
Wow. Because look, that is absolutely amazing because, some people, they don't need a lot. They just need something to get them through to be able to get to the next stage or the next level. They just need a little buffer there just to then help them go excel. So that's I think that's just such a fantastic business model. So where do you see it going? I mean, I can just imagine now that you've kind of got the concept and it's all working well. Like, do you see this like scaling, like, overseas, or like what sort of the next sort of vision over the next sort of 5 or 10 years for you?
Yeah, like I think we can create more products. So we've one new product that we've just created, we're calling Inventory Advance, and that works really well for e-commerce companies or manufacturing companies. So to buy, we can lend for purchase of parts or purchase product. And so that's one. I think there'll be other debt products that we can also bring to the market. I think, we're thinking about how we create a non-venture style equity fund and be able to make equity investments in companies. We are thinking about overseas as well. Like I think Asia especially, there's some big opportunity. So but we have barely even scratched the surface here. So all of these things are in the future.
Well, I just think Australia is just to launch a business is such a great place. I really do think that Australia and the ecosystem of the whole founders and there's some amazing entrepreneurs in Australia. But one thing I always am fascinated by is, just the founder mindset. What do you think it takes? And obviously you've scaled companies, built companies yourself. Is there something you have identified over the years of doing this that you go, that's it, that right there, that characteristic, that trait, that get up and go attitude, that's what makes them who they are? Have you identified any patterns?
Definitely. I think, when there's a passion and a maybe a history or what, if you said to me that you also have been very, wanted to be financially independent from the start, and you can talk to your childhood about what you did to be financially independent, and then you're launching a business that helps women become financially independent, and it's just like your passion is screaming and it's been your whole life's work, that sort of that passion and energy and inherent want to do this thing, it really always stands out a mile because, as we talked about, like it's a hard journey, and if you don't have that inner commitment, then it's going to be hard to get through those tough times. So that always stands out to me. I do look for that sort of that link to why it's important to you as a person, and then on top of that, then you know, try to see resilience, you know, strangely areas of character. So yeah.
Thank you so much for listening to today's podcast. I wanted to quickly pop in and talk to you about our amazing supporter, CH Talent Solutions. We are an IT and digital recruitment company based in Australia. If you are someone right now looking for a new opportunity or considering a career pivot, please reach out to one of our consultants. Or if you are somebody looking to build your team or build your company or scale, again, please reach out to us if you are looking to find the best tech talent fast. I look forward to connecting with you. Now back to today's episode. Enjoy. Well, I think every single person, whether you have a business or not, has been tested over the last 3 years. We've gone from a global pandemic into a recession. I generally do think, Jodie, people right now are really struggling. Like, I work in tech recruitment, is what my business is in. There's been a lot of tech layoffs. A lot of people have been losing their jobs. They found themselves back on the marketplace. Sometimes, you know, 2-3 times. That is hard. That is really, really tough. So what have you been seeing over the last sort of few years from that mental health piece of founders and people you've been working with? And also I'd love to know as well, from your point of view, what you've done personally when you found yourself struggling in those sort of lower moods points in your sort of career over the last few years, how you've sort of managed to keep on going and get yourself into a good headspace again. Because I do honestly feel like right now, especially in tech, actually, there's a lot of people that are kind of having a really tough time.
Yeah, I do think so too. And it's interesting, like, I've been through marriage separation, business closed down, homeschooling 3 kids through a pandemic. Like, I've tested all of my positive skills for sure. And I think, I've cried a lot.
Yeah. I think we all have. Breathed into a paper bag a few times.
I think, and you're right, like I remember in the pandemic, especially in Victoria, it was so brutal. And it was like no one was untouched by that. Like over Correct. The period of a few years, like even if people were winning at the start, then they weren't. And, you know, like no one got away with that. For me, I started meditation. I do TM meditating. I walk, like I exercise every single day. I try to walk in nature every single day. What else do I do? I talk a lot to friends. I'm an oversharer. my poor friends have to all the time. I think that helps. Yeah, I've learned how to really ugly cry and thrash around and just try to get rid of all that sort of stuff. It's I think talking about it really helps. I think women are better at that than men, and so we do have an advantage in that. And you know, I've spoken to a lot of our founders in our Tractor Village, and because once you get funding at Tractor, you come into our village of all the founders, us, our investors, who are all mostly exited founders, experts. You know, and I've had specific calls with founders who just want to talk about their mental health. Like, just can I talk to you? I may have been through this and I'm struggling right now. And I think the chat we had earlier, like, that's not just you and I. Like, it's your own expectations that drive sometimes the mental challenge. And so, yeah, it's a combination of things. But also realizing that all of us struggle, right? It's the human condition. No matter what we do, all of us are struggling. Like, even if that doesn't appear to be that way, like, we all are.
And Jodie, honestly, this is why I have these conversations, because I would never want someone to look at my life or any of the people that I have on the podcast's life and go, they've got it all figured out. Because the reality is no one does. And everybody goes through down days. Everybody goes through struggles. And it's how we navigate through that really, I guess, is the difference between some that go on to do great things and others that really struggle their whole lives. And I just think it's, you know, social media, however much I love it and I need it for business, it is also such a huge one for mental health. And I think it does really has impacted my own mental health in the past, but also a lot of people that I know, love and care for. You know, it's so easy just to go onto Instagram and go, oh, look at that person's perfect life. And look at that like, the reality is everybody's struggling. Every single person, like you said, there's not been one person I've spoken to over the last few years that hasn't gone through something mentally, physically, emotionally, spiritually. And everything you just said there, you do, I do. I move every day. It is just a non-negotiable for me. If I don't move, I don't feel good. I meditate. Meditation was a huge one for me and got me out of a really bad bout of anxiety all those years ago. And I still do it every single day. Journaling has been a really big one for me as well. Yes. Getting my thoughts onto paper. Like, you know, if anyone found my journals, I think they'd be quite concerned about me. But, you know, it's all of my private thoughts, you know, and things that I'm going through, but better out than in, right? That's what I always say.
That's right. And therapy, I should say. Well, so much therapy.
100%. I had a clinical psychologist on, Dr. Lillian, a couple of weeks back. She was incredible. And I was just like, God, like you should be like the poster woman for therapy, because you are just, you know, if people just listen to this conversation, they wouldn't be so embarrassed or shameful about going to therapy. I've had therapy myself and it's just something that I think, you know, we all need it in times of our life. Yeah. So it's just really important to have these conversations. But one thing that I really wanted to touch upon when I was doing some research for this podcast is all around, I guess, women founders as well. There is a lack of women starting businesses. I think the Deloitte study recently said it was only 22% in Australia. In your personal opinion, your own experience, why do you think that is? Is there just more pressure on women? If, you know, what is it? If you have a thought or opinion on it, what have you experienced in your own, from your own personal experience as well?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's such a complex issue. And I talk, I'm part of like so many conversations about this, and it's really, you know, I think, and I guess with my lens, we talk about, you know, the non-VC journey. So a lot of my thoughts come from the traditional, if you're a startup, you need to raise money, you need to get that headline, you need to say, you know, X, Y investor has invested in me. But I think for women, they have more of a work-family balance and they have more responsibility at home. But men are absolutely way better now than they used to be. And that's, you know, a lot of families share this, but I think still ultimately, the woman or the mum like bears a lot more of that responsibility. And so she can't commit to that VC journey. So she's, you know, just not going to be, you know, the numbers are not going to be, you know, women orientated, you know, and when you look at the numbers that, you know, how much funding women get, they're not there because they can't be. Also, I think there's just not enough women investors, and that's for a whole host of reasons. They don't get the same super. They haven't been paid as well. They haven't had the opportunities. They haven't got the boys club, you know, so they don't have the money to then become the investor that then starts investing.
Yeah.
It's just this whole systematic thing. So I think sometimes the problems they're solving are not problems that men understand, and men are the investors, and so then they don't I think they're kind of
the core, which leads me beautifully on to my next question, which is something that I think, so I think it stems from our society, girls in school, you know, you sit at the back of the classroom, you're told good girl because you sat there quietly, whereas the boys are getting all the attention because they're being rowdy and stuff. So I think we talk quite early on as females, or this is my own personal experience, to sit there, be a good girl, don't speak up. That's where you get your validation from. That's where I did anyway as a female. When I look about my childhood, the sorts of toys and things I used to play with, you know, and see, and even now when I go into toy shops to buy toys for my friend's daughters, it's like ironing boards and kitchens and babies. And I'm like, what are we teaching here? Yeah. I got really fired up the other day. I went to a toy shop and I was like, I stormed out. I was like, I'm not having any part of this. But I saw that you mentor grade 8 and 9 girls, and this is something that I think over the next sort of like decade of my life, if I really want to start giving back even more, that must be so fulfilling. But I think you're also addressing, you're sort of addressing something that I think starts in our society very early on. So what's that journey been like, mentoring these young women who are going to be our future? How have you gone about that? And what have you noticed as well, out of curiosity?
Yeah, I've been very lucky to have met the team at Haileybury High School, and they invited me to come and mentor. And so I've been doing it since 2020. It started in the lockdown, and I remember actually this Zoom call, and there were all these girls in their bedrooms, and we had to stay on the problem that they were solving and not jump to the solution. So for 1 hour, we sat at the problem, which was anxiety. So these 13, 14-year-old girls were anxious, and they were trying to create colouring in books or things for anxiety. And so the challenge was, okay, so I kept thought, why are you anxious? What are you anxious about? And it's like, mum and dad want me to be like really successful at school. My brother, I need to be as successful as my brother or sister. They were anxious about things like if they walked across the schoolyard without a friend, that others might think they don't have a friend. You know, all of these things. And I was like, I remember that horrible anxiety over all of that stuff, self-image and definitely don't want to be back at that age, I guess. For all the anxiety I have now, it's not that bad. So beautiful. And you know, I remember asking them at the end of the call, like, how do you feel after we've had this talk? And I was like holding up the tears, and they were like, oh, I thought it was just me. Like, but all the girls have the same anxiety. So I felt like it was a really powerful hour that we had, and that they all got to learn that they're not alone. But since then, every year I go along, and now I'm in the classroom, and it's funny, the different going around to the different groups, and you know, some of them are like, oh, they're just sponges, and others are just like, can you like hurry up and get out of the way? And it's like, and I think but I'm assured by the teachers that, you know, things that I may have said or little impressions I may have given about this journey and this option that you can take in life may sink in at the other point.
I have no doubt, because I think we don't realize when we're young how much our upbringing, the people we surround ourselves with, influence our future. And again, it all comes back to one thing I always say: you can't be what you can't see. And you walking in there as a successful female entrepreneur, had her own business, earned her own money, now supporting other entrepreneurs, would be so inspiring, and will do something in their brains to go, that's what's possible. And I think that is so, so powerful. It will 100%. I wish that I'd had that experience from a young age. and there just wasn't the female role models. Like, I guess that's one good thing about social media, however much it does play, there's a dark side to it as well. We have more access now to what it takes to build a business, you know, all of these female entrepreneurs, like these conversations like this, girls can tune in and go, oh, that's interesting, I hadn't thought about that. But when I was growing up, it was literally just magazines full of skinny models and, you know, what diet I should be on that week, and that was it. That was all I had access to. No wonder, you know, my confidence was shattered to pieces during my teenage years, because I was going on and looking at all these airbrush magazines, looking at, you know, the Spice Girls, and they're all part of my generation, and instantly just feeling like I wasn't good enough. We're on a whole other playing field now with social media. I would say it's even probably worse. But I guess it is who you follow and being aware of, it's all a showreel. But look, I just read that on your LinkedIn profile, and I just thought, wow, that's amazing. And I think you will be making impact on those young minds. But thanks. One other thing that I also wanted to touch upon today, which is obviously a shared passion of ours as well, is the whole women in tech piece as well. Because working in technology recruitment for the last 10 years, the first sort of few years of that career, I think I can count on one hand the amount of women I placed, the amount of female tech, you know, hiring managers I met with and recruited for. It has come a long way, but we still have a long way to go. So I'd love to get your thoughts and opinions on how we can bridge that gap, get more women to tech. Technology is the future. I don't know one business that doesn't use technology. We're using it right now. How can we encourage more women to pursue a career in technology? Any ideas and thoughts on that?
Yeah, definitely. It's totally a passion area for me, as we discussed and know. And I think it's like all of us can be vocal about it and talk about what we do. And as you say, like, you can't be what you can't see, so be seen. And I think that definitely helps. We support great companies like Code Like a Girl. They're part of our village, and they're doing great work for even I was talking to one of the team members about my 9-year-old daughter, and she's like, I'm like, I can't wait till she's old enough to get to start to come to Code Like a Girl and these things. She's like, oh, no, she can get it. So, you know, it's just sort of, being seen, seeing the options, sharing the options with our younger generations, our daughters, our friends. I'm very also passionate about this. We support another company called Girls Get Off, and Viv does this amazing job of just being vocal and out there about our sexual health and our sexual identities. Yes. and trying to strip away that shame as well. And exactly. It's great. So there's many areas we can do it in. I think we just got to just keep not being that quiet little good girl. We need to be vocal.
We 100% do. And oh God, I mean, that's how long have we got? That's a whole topic in itself, right? But one thing I will say, and it's look, I'm not a parent, so I don't know how I'd navigate this. But one thing I will say that my mom did quite well when I was growing up, she did a lot of things well. No one's perfect, but one thing I think I'll give her a lot of credit for is sex growing up was not a dirty word in my house. It was openly talked about. It was like, you know, that's how you got here. It's natural. You know, she was very pro. My mum's always been very pro women empowerment from that point of view as well. But I think that's that great. Again, there is so much shame around it. And, you know, and unfortunately, what I see happen is if we don't talk about it from quite a young age, I don't know what the age should be, but now that we've got access to the internet, the problem is that girls can get access to porn, right? And I don't know about you, but I would hate for a young girl to watch that or come across that and think that's what sex is, because that's not sex. That's not intimacy. That's not love, affection, right? So, I mean, that we're going completely off topic here. So we're just, you know, but again, it's just so important to have these conversations because young girls could log on and see that.
I actually don't think it's off topic, and I'm sorry that most of my conversations come back to this topic these days. Because my mum, was the opposite. I actually thought I grew up in a non-religious home, but actually I realised, and mum and dad were separated, I realised recently that actually my mum grew up in a boarding school run by nuns.
Oh,
and
my goodness.
Talk about anything, like nothing.
Wow.
It's only in recent years that I'm exploring this whole world of, you know, exploration and shameless intimacy. my kids are hearing, they're hearing about it quite a lot. I think it's important that it is, as you say, it's a natural part of life. And I think it's very empowering if you can harness that side of your life.
Yeah, 100%. And yeah, I think, again, it's like I would rather have good information rather than, like you say, they're going to find it out whether we like it or not. I didn't have access to the internet when I was growing up and I was a young girl. I was like, and I'm kind of grateful for that because I think it kept me younger for longer. But these days, kids are growing up a lot quicker. Like, it actually pains me to hear that there's 12-year-olds with anxiety. That is so upsetting. I probably had anxiety from 12, maybe when I was 12 as well, but I know what that word meant. You know, I think
it wasn't a word. I was a highly anxious kid and it wasn't a word. But I wanted to say as well, when you said about porn, I was just at South by Southwest and Cindy Gallup was one of the keynote speakers, and Cindy's from the US and she has a business called Make Love, Not Porn. And it's awesome. And it's all about ethical porn. And so like spreading that word is important too, because it is like, it's women-based porn. It's not just that old school. Yeah. It is about, you know, women and men finding pleasure in sex and the real side of it, not the staged or whatever.
Yeah, 100%. I'd like to have her on the podcast because this is something that it does concern me for the younger generation, and I'm not a parent, and I feel for the parents out there that are trying to navigate this crazy world that we're finding ourselves in now. But yeah it's definitely a really important topic. But look, I'd love to sort of know, like, what is next for you? Like, you have achieved so much. You are, you know, helping so many people, entrepreneurs, founders. What do you sort of see like the next sort of 5 or 10 years looks like for Jodie? And in all of that as well, I'd love to know how you are going to make sure that you stay true to yourself, your values, and make sure that you come out of this incredible journey and still feel healthy, happy, and good about yourself as well.
Yeah, I think I keep talking about I don't plan to retire, and so I think that I've got a good at least another 40 years of work life in me.
Easy.
Easy, well, yeah, at least. Yeah. And so, you know, the tractor journey, you know, it's already been 3 years and it's just gone like that. So, you know, that's going to be my what I'm doing definitely in the next 5 years. But I think ultimately what I really want to do at some point is build some sort of foundation that helps girls and women find their financial independence. That's like coming back to the start of this story, that's like so dear to my heart. And I feel like I'm already investing as an angel investor in women founders, and I do a lot of other stuff, donate to charities in the space and mentoring and all that sort of stuff. But I do want to build on that. And ultimately I'd love to sort of pull all that together into some sort of foundation. So I do see that in the future. And that's, you know, it's just, I think when you love what you do every day, which I do, like I have so much fun. I love my team. I love the people I work with. I get to have fascinating chats with people like yourself, and that's my just a day in the life. It's just fun, and it's, you know, learning from all these amazing people living their dreams. And I think when that's probably one of the key things to help keep me balanced and happy and healthy is just like to all of the listeners out there, I do think, so you know, we've talked about how hard it is, but actually, like, it's if you love what you do, just, you know, you're just a happier person.
I completely agree. And I think that it is enjoying the journey. I think that's the key thing I've learned in this over the last 5 years of building the recruitment business is that, and also it's accepting that not every day you're going to wake up and feel motivated and want to get like, and on those days, and I don't know about you, Jodie, but I, in the past, I used to push myself to just work. And actually what I do now is pull back a little bit, because I think it's when you're so passionate about something, you can almost work yourself into the ground a bit too much, and then you go, oh, I've pushed it too hard now, I'm actually exhausted, I'm not sleeping. It's those warning signs are really important as well.
Yeah, I used to always feel so guilty whenever I wasn't working. I remember one day sitting on the couch with our two babies, and I'm like, it was a Sunday, and Janine Ellis came on the TV, and she's like, I work 24/7. I'm like, what are we doing sitting here? I'm like, oh my God. I woke up a sleeping baby. Like, what are you? It's just like, but now at Tractor, we do a 4-day work week. I don't work for 3 days of the week. I just don't. And then I work very intently for the other 4 days. And so, like, it is very important that you also rest and recharge, especially if you're going to do this for a long time.
100%. And again, I will promise I'll wrap this up in a sec, but it is just so important to spread that message, because I think we do live in a hustle culture. And I think, yes, you can go at it 12-hour day, 16-hour day, 7 days a week for a period, but it is not sustainable over the long run if you actually want to remain healthy and happy and do this, like you said, for the long run. And it is a marathon, it's not a sprint. And if you try and do that, you will quickly burn out, and then you're not going to enjoy it. And then what's it all for?
That's
who wants to be the richest person in the graveyard? Like, no thanks. I actually want to enjoy my life as well, right? And have good relationships and enjoy the fruits of my labor. And but it's just funny when you said that, because I remember vividly like days where, you know, I tune in and watch a YouTube motivational YouTube channel. Oh, I'm not working hard enough. I'm a failure. I need to get going. And, you know, it's the quickest way to just exhaust yourself. But look, I have really, really enjoyed this conversation. So where can I send people to find out more about you, Tractor Ventures, and everything that you're doing?
So tractorventures.com is our website. Yeah. And so everything's there, and you can reach out to us through there. Otherwise, I try to limit my social media, but I'm very active on LinkedIn. So you can find me, Jodie MM, on LinkedIn, and you'll hear from me most days there.
Amazing. Go and follow Jodie. I just hope that you've enjoyed this conversation as much as what I have. Jodie, thank you so much for coming on today. And thank you to every single person that's tuned in. Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. If you enjoy these episodes, the number one thing you can do to help us grow and keep spreading our mission and message is to hit the subscribe button. And if you have time, give us a quick rating. Appreciate each and every one of you who tune in every week. And we look forward to bringing you many more episodes this year. Take care.